It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Working-age men are dropping out of the labor force in rural Wisconsin, and it follows a nationwide trend. According to federal data, over 1 in 10 men aged 25 to 54 are out of the workforce. That's down from nearly 100% labor force participation by men in the 1950s. Now, new research finds that men, among other things, are leaving jobs after feeling disrespected by leadership and losing enthusiasm for the work. Sarah Halpern-Meekin is a professor in the School of Human Ecology in the La Follette School of Public Affairs and director of the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison. Sarah, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me.
You interviewed dozens of these men from across rural Wisconsin for your research. Where did you go to find them?
Well, we tried to reach people in a lot of different ways. So we put up flyers across all different communities, you know, in laundromats and libraries. And we put up posts on, you know, Craigslist gig sites to try to reach people. One of the things that can be challenging with this sort of research is we're trying to reach a group who's defined by not being someplace, and trying to find people who are not someplace is a little trickier than reaching people who are in a particular place.
I want to go right into some of these interviews you did. One man you spoke with, Grant, said he was let go from a dairy farm after years because he lacked a specialized degree. How is education a predictor of men seeking work?
So, you know, one of the things that you talked about at the beginning is this drop we've seen in prime-age men's labor force participation. Prime-age men are those 25 to 54-year-olds. And we've seen a starker decline in labor force participation for men who have the lowest levels of education, like less than a high school degree. We've seen some decline for men with a high school degree. And those declines have been starker than what we've seen for men with a college degree.
And Grant raked leaves, picked up lots of side hustles. What effect does the gig economy have on these men who are out of the formal workforce?
Often, I think when we talk about the gig economy, we think about somebody driving for Lyft or Uber or DoorDash or something like that. Those are not similarly options in rural areas the way they are for people living in urban areas. And so the kind of gig work that we saw people picking up looked a lot more like stuff that's been around for a long time. Raking leaves, like you talked about, finding side construction jobs, somebody who needs, you know, a new set of tiles installed in their house and picking up that job and working for cash under the table.
You write about men thinking of formal work as assaults on their dignity. How would you describe the sense of dignity that you found in these men?
They felt like they should be treated okay on the job, and that they shouldn't be disrespected and shown a real disregard for what they contributed on the job. And so it's not that they didn't value work, it's that they valued work, their hard work, and they wanted their bosses and their coworkers to similarly respect them on the job. And so that could look like, you know, one man we talked to talked about having severely injured his arm on the job. And when he paged his boss to say, "I got hurt," she didn't respond for hours. And then eventually he was told to just head home. And nobody checked on him. So those kinds of things, right? It's about being shown care, like you matter, that you have value at work, the sort of things that most of us would want to receive on the job.
In terms of injury, a stat from your research, nearly two-thirds of people out of work point to their own illness or disability as the number one reason. What did you learn about the mental and physical health of the men you interviewed?
So mental and physical health are big reasons why men are out of the labor force. So when we look at the reasons why women describe being out of the labor force during those prime age years, the most common reason they give is that they're doing caregiving work. For men, the most common reason they give is that they're dealing with a disability or another kind of health issue.
Your research found men outside the labor force may have a subculture that rejects expertise and mainstream institutions. How are men's feelings towards, you know, institutions affecting workforce participation? Can you kind of parse that?
Yeah, so I think some people expect that there's going to be a subculture of rejecting work or rejecting expertise. And what we saw was something pretty different, that there was a real respect for hard work and that they took pride in the areas that they had expertise in, that those were things they felt proud of, jobs they had done well at, skills that they had, the abilities they had to figure something out, right? To figure out how to fix something when they needed to do things for themselves. And so we saw this real dedication to hard work and doing for yourself. So even though they were out of the labor force, that didn't mean they didn't have a regard for work.
And that's what I really took away strongly from learning the stories of these men, that the meaning of work, not just the wage, the income, really matters, that it is really about what you're contributing.
Yeah, exactly. People want to do work that feels meaningful. And that meaning can come from the relationships that you have with your boss and your coworkers. The meaning can come from looking back on the work that you've done at the end of the day and feeling like you've contributed something. So men told us about, for example, working on building projects and being able to look back and think, I helped build that house. Or Grant, who you brought up, talking about the feeling good about having taken care of these cows and had them had calves and had those calves grow up and being able to feel this sense of what we call generativity, right? That you've contributed something to the world. And that feeling was sometimes hard to come by with many of the job opportunities that were available to them. You know, if you're going to tighten a certain piece on a factory floor 7,000 times every shift, that needs some more support to feel like you're really contributing to something larger than yourself.
We're talking about a rise in men opting out of the workforce with Sarah Halpern-Meekin, professor in the School of Human Ecology and the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. Sarah, what could employers take away from your research, and how could they convince men to rejoin the labor force? What needs to change?
So the conversation has really been about pay and benefits, and I certainly don't disregard those things. Those things matter, right? Pay and benefits matter. They matter because they're compensation, but the other way that they matter is they're a show of respect for somebody. So to pay a longtime worker less than you pay a new worker, that matters because of the dollars and cents, but it also matters because it can be felt as a sign of disrespect for the seniority and skills that somebody is bringing to the job. So thinking about how employees are treated, what respect are they shown, what sense are they given that they are part of a larger mission, and not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. So having the pay and benefits, the opportunities for promotion, the responsibility and power on the job, the autonomy that people have over their work to back up those statements. So not just saying, yes, we value everyone here, but thinking about how you show that way of valuing all of your employees.
In terms of the job opportunities available to these men, I mean, we're seeing that, you know, over half of Wisconsin's counties have fewer jobs than in 2019. Could a decline in opportunities affect these men?
Yes, absolutely. A decline in opportunities is part of what's going on, right? And so it means that there are fewer jobs that are attractive, that are appealing. It means that people face a trade-off. Do you stay in your community where you have long-term relationships with your friends, neighbors, and family, or do you move for work? And I think those are really important decisions that we don't just want to think about at an individual level, but we want to think about what happens to our communities when the people who are most able and willing to move for better job opportunities do so. What does that do for our rural communities?
In terms of the world around us, former President Trump will be sworn in later this month. Some political analysts say that Trump really tailored his campaign to appeal to disaffected men. How might a Trump presidency affect how men view the workforce?
So I think that remains to be seen what happens, what kind of policies come to pass. One of the things that we'll be paying attention to, for example, are what happens with our trade. You know, it affects people if prices rise because we have new tariffs or things like that, because that affects the cost of living for people. We're just going to really need to pay attention to what kind of investments there are from the federal government that come down to states and local communities that can create opportunities, invest in workforce development, both at the individual level and in terms of supporting employers at having job opportunities that work well for the local workforce.
As we wrap up here, traditionally men have been called the breadwinner in traditional family roles. And I'm wondering if you got a sense from these interviews that the men had found peace in their lives and their role in their community, and did they feel settled?
I think many of the men felt that they had an obligation to contribute to their families that's different than having an obligation to be the sole breadwinner. So Grant, who you mentioned at the beginning, right, he talked about how he and his wife both contributed to their family, and she had a formal job at a retail establishment. And so she had those formal earnings, and he supplemented that by doing all of the other kinds of jobs that he did. So his wages were more fluctuating than hers, but he felt it was important that they both contributed. Many of the men also did caregiving for children, for sick family members. So while they were out of the formal labor force, they were still also finding other ways to contribute to their family through those gig jobs, cash jobs, caregiving, and then also self-provisioning, hunting, gardening, things like that, building and fixing things around the house.
Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your research with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah Halpern-Meekin is a professor in the School of Human Ecology in the La Follette School of Public Affairs, director of the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison. We've been talking about her research on why men lead the labor force in their prime working years. She was lead author of a recent article in the journal Rural Sociology called The Dignity of Non-Working Men.